seeing the things written on the subway walls and tenement halls, the sounds of silence, dead people. The culture is dying. When will we be honest with one another? Race, righteousness, and redemption. Detroit recorded 95% of mothers under 20 were unmarried. The seventh highest in the country. No wonder Detroit is the number one city in America for violence. It's not a mystery. If we'll face the facts, we might have hope for the future. Repentance is in order if we would have redemption. Thanks for joining us. Get a copy of the fact sheet right there on our website, A Portrait of the Black Family, saveus.org. Become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. God bless you. Let's pray for this desperate situation.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian and Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next half hour anyway, they're going to be the views of Josh Hart. And we're going to be talking about smart meters. And a lot of people say, oh, smart meters, but why worry about that? You know, it's just a means of determining how much electricity we're using. And, well, it really is much more than that because, of course, you basically are having certainly electronic impulses going through your community and going through your home. But not only that, but, of course, the smart meters. Then, of course, certainly will be tying into the smart appliances and all of your appliances. Electrical appliance will have chips in them, and it will feed information back into the smart meter, which will feed into the smart grid, and everything you do in your home will be monitored. And of course, a lot of people might not even be aware of this, but many people are very sensitive to the electromagnetic waves. And Josh, without further ado, why don't you tell us what's going on in England? I know you've been over there. Tell us what's happening there and what's really happening here as far as the smart meters are concerned.
Stan, it's great to be on the program. Thank you very much for having me. You know, I think the good news here, there's a lot of bad news out there these days, but the good news as far as smart meters go is that the international movement to stop them, to get them removed, to have a halt, this madness, continues to build. And my recent trip to the UK and to Ireland really confirmed that. You know, we worked with groups over there, Stop Smart Meters UK, who put on a big event down in Sussex, south of London, which I spoke at, and many other, you know, anti-smart meter activists spoke at. And there's a major educational effort going on there now to try and prevent these meter systems from going in. There are smart meters being deployed right now in both Ireland and the UK, but they're at a significantly earlier stage than they are in the U.S.
Why don't you tell our listeners what's wrong with the smart meters? I mean, what's more? We've always had electronic meters on our houses. That's how they measure the amount of electricity we use. So what all this fuss about the smart meters? It's just a different type of electric meter, isn't it? Or is it?
It's a meter that can burn you to death and has burned people to death. And that's not exaggerating. Those are the facts. The first and most present danger to our safety is from fire and electrical faults. And the Underwriters Laboratory has not, of course, reviewed these meters for safety. And we've seen people die, people's homes burned down. Larry Nickel of Vacaville, California, lost his life in July of 2010 from a poorly installed meter. There have been other cases in Vacaville and around California, around the country, where people's homes and lives have been destroyed, and a lack of any government oversight or investigation to solve this matter, to get to the heart of why these meters are burning. And I think it's very troubling. So that's the first, you know, and most urgent pressing issue in terms of people's safety. But the radio frequency, of course, we'll talk about after the break, is very, very dangerous as well.
But we're surrounded by electric frequencies, electromagnetic frequencies. There are radio waves all around us, certainly, and television waves, and now we have Wi-Fi in our homes. So why would simply a little bit more be of any concern?
Well, I think that the smart meters are, in a lot of ways, the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of cumulative exposures from these devices that we're exposed to. Many people, systems, particularly women, cannot tolerate the extra radio frequency radiation. And that's just a biological fact.
Hold that thought. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We've got a great 4-tape set and 4-CD set on this subject. Josh, you go right ahead.
Hi, Stan.
Go right ahead and with your discussion of the smart meters.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, in terms of health impact, many people, you know, are suffering from anywhere from mild to severe effects. And, you know, we've seen a lawsuit that's been filed in Northern and Southern California to obtain damages from the utilities for these effects. And there have been developments over the past 6 months that are very, very disturbing in terms of the international fight against the smart grid. We've seen two mothers arrested simply for saying no to a smart meter, for telling an installer that they were not welcome on their property. These women were sent to jail and are now being charged with misdemeanors by the city of Naperville, Illinois. And they all deserve, of course, our support and gratitude for taking the stand that they have. We've also seen terrible abuses in Wisconsin. 81-year-old woman, grandmother, got heart palpitations from the meter's radiation, you know, this pulse radiation that was on her home, and said, "I don't want this, the water smart meter, the wireless smart meter installed." They cut off her water last week. I mean, I'm not kidding you, Stan. I mean, it's hard to believe that that's even happening in this country right now. But utilities are cutting off people's basic essential utilities for refusing a carcinogenic radiation, which is what the World Health Organization considers this type of radiation that the smart meter emits, and that our cell phones emit, that Wi-Fi emits. I mean, it's all been presented to us as safe by the authorities, but we are increasingly seeing that it's not, in sometimes very, very serious ways.
Well, now, basically, is the smart meter radiation similar to the cell phone radiation?
It's in a similar frequency range. The main transmission from most smart meters, at least the ones that Pacific Gas and Electric here are installing in the California coast, they are similar frequency range to cell phones. Wi-Fi is 2.4 gigahertz generally, but there's new Wi-Fi and cordless phones that are up to 5 or 6 gigahertz. But each, you know, frequency, different frequencies have different effects. We are, you know, our bodies are, our, the human body is a amalgamation of cells that communicate with electromagnetic radiation. So for these companies to claim that there's no effect below a thermal effect, completely unfounded, not based on science. It's like a modern-day myth that's being spread. So, you know, independent-thinking people need to, remove these wireless devices from their lives and their homes and demand nothing less. Other neighborhoods.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Josh Hart. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening, Josh Hart, we're talking about smart meters in the home, and a lot of people are saying, well, why worry about it? I mean, we got radiation around us all the time, and that's really true. We do have an awful lot of radiation around us, but there are problems from this radiation. Now, first of all, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. As I've told you before, basically the media in America is controlled and much of the important information is suppressed, but fortunately you do have the internet and you can check things out on the internet. Of course, you have to be careful because there's a lot of disinformation there as well. But I do happen to know a little bit about this type of radiation. The smart meter radiation is very similar to cell phone radiation. A very good friend of mine, in fact, my best friend, basically attended the University of Washington. And when cell phones were coming out, why, of course, they did some studies on these. And they found out that they were carcinogenic. They had all sorts of deleterious effects on the health. And there was a definite increase in mental problems. But one of the things that we know from cell phones is that basically if you have a cell phone, a man, and you wear that on your belt or in your pocket, why suddenly your sperm count's going to fall about 50%. And what does it do to the sperm that survive? Well, we don't know how many congenital abnormalities are going to result from that, but you can count the sperm, and they know this is true, and you can go up on the internet and check what I'm telling you about. Now, of course, University of Washington, I said they had done these studies on this. They were going to publish it. They were actually threatened. They were threatened by the electronic industry and the cell phone industry. If they dared to publish the truth about the danger of cell phones, and to the credit of the people there at the University of Washington, they ignored the threats to their federal grants and federal money, and they actually did publish it, and my friend brought me a copy of the article that appeared in the publication of the University of Washington. Most of the truth about the danger, certainly of these things, are concealed. Cell phone towers, we actually have a woman, we've had her a guest a number of times. Her son and a cluster of young people, about five or six of them, were in an office very, very close to a cell phone tower, and they all got cancer of one sort or another, and her son died of cancer of the brain. And there's a very definite relationship between the cell phone towers and cancer of the brain. But remember, ladies and gentlemen, your cell phone is a transmitter. And when it's on and suddenly you're holding it up to your next to your head, it's sending out very powerful waves that are going right into your head. In fact, it's been widely acknowledged that cell phones for children less than 10 years of age are potentially dangerous and increase the incidence of brain cancer. And certainly if the cell phones will do it, then smart meters will as well, because they're active. Certainly they're not simply passive. The smart meters are sending out radio messages. Is that right, Joss?
That's right. I mean, if there's any message for this weekend, I think it's, you know, put your phone down, disconnect your smartphone or your regular phone for a little while and get away from those smart meters and, you know, just really pay attention to how your body feels, because a lot of times this stuff is subtle. I mean, I myself get headaches around smart meters, and, you know, it's not okay for the utility companies to put their own selfish interests above our well-being. You know, it's just simply not acceptable. And, you know, increasingly we see resistance and people taking a stand, and internationally this is spreading to all other continents and other countries. And, you know, we just got to keep fighting and resisting and drawing a line that when, you know, our grandmother's water is turned off because she gets ill from the utility equipment forcibly installed in her house. You know, these are very, very serious times. And with the revelations by Edward Snowden and the privacy implications of the smart meter system, that the government can have a direct channel into the private homes of almost every single one of us, it's very, very chilling. And when you consider all of the surrounding evidence and the accumulating evidence of government and utility collusion around the smart grid program, and how many thousands and thousands and millions of victims we've seen from it, you know, we need to come together and put a stop to that.
And I think what people have to understand is just one thing about radio waves, but unless you're quite close to a transmitter, you're not going to get them. You're just going to be on the receiving end. And the same thing with television. Unless you're close to a television, obviously a transmitter, you're not going to get high levels of this. But it's all cumulative. It started with radio, and then it went to television, and then it went to cell phone, and now into smart meters, and literally dozens of Wi-Fi. And basically, of course, it is the transmitter that gets you into trouble, and that's what the smart meter is. It is a transmitter. And, of course, if you are unlucky enough to have sort of a master transmitter, because maybe 20 or 30 homes will then feed into this master transmitter, and you don't know whether you have a master transmitter or not, but it takes in all the messages from the other local cell phone, smartphones or smart meters, and then it transmits those onto a major center, what is so-called the smart grid. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Josh, most people are going to say, look, if there's really a problem, the government would know, and they certainly wouldn't allow it. I mean, if it's going to be harmful to us and to our children, would they?
There's a long, sordid history, as I think you're aware, Dr. Stan, of chemicals and technologies unleashed on the public, assuming that it was safe until proven otherwise, and we know that, you know, millions of our family members, friends, and deceased have paid the price for that, those mistakes and that arrogance that's come along with, you know, really our capitalist system that prioritizes profit over people. I mean, it's getting to be unbearable for individuals and certainly unbearable for the planet.
Okay, well, we've got Ann calling us from Cincinnati. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And hi, Ann, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I have a quick question. I was having a lot of problems with my allergies after they installed a smart meter. It was about 3 weeks, 4 weeks after they installed it. Just got worse until I finally moved. And what happened was they installed it directly underneath where I was sleeping.
All right. Are you still having the trouble with the allergies, Ann?
No, I moved out and started getting better. It has not been that bad. It's been 7 months now. It hasn't been that bad ever since I left that residence.
Oh, yeah, but you actually moved out of the residence because of the smart meter. Josh, what do you think about what Ann is saying?
What's been very common that we've heard reports of are the smart meters, electronic pulses, inhibiting your immune system, and that can absolutely lead to allergies or any. It can manifest itself in a lot of different, symptoms, but. You know, we certainly see a correlation between people who spent long periods of time with sleeping or working near a smart meter within, 10 feet, are particularly at risk. And this includes babies who happen to be in cribs that their parents put against the wall, whether the bank of smart meters. There are no warnings about this. So this type of thing is going on all the time. And the kind of reports we're receiving are more serious if the person has had in closer proximity to the meters. So, this is a very, very serious situation, and it's good that you've gotten away from the meter.
Okay. And anything else you wanted to say or tell us?
Yes. The differentiation, please, in the title smart meter versus the title digital meter, please. And I'll go ahead and hang up now. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
God bless you, and thank you for telling us and sharing that with us. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Now, that was Ann calling from Cincinnati, Ohio, where we have a station this evening, and we have a lot of listeners back there in Cincinnati, and certainly I wonder if any others are having this sort of a problem. But this is really a nationwide, in fact, it's a worldwide program, isn't it, Josh?
It is. And I just want to address the last question. Regarding digital meters, and the utility companies make this more confusing than it has to be, of course, with the idea that they're going to confuse you and make you give up. But what's important to know is that your old analog meter with the spinning disc is generally safe. Now, those are the meters that they're trying to replace. They're replacing them with a variety of digital meters. These are the meters with the numeral display on the front, typically made out of plastic. Any meter that the utility is newly installing on your house is suspect, even if it appears to be an analog with a spinning disc or dials, because they've been known to put hidden wireless transmitting equipment and digital equipment into the meter. Now, if they claim that it's a non-transmitting meter, there's still health problems potential with that, because it's the digital equipment, the electronics on the meter itself require what's called a switching mode power supply. And that makes the quality of the power dirty, and a threat to your health. So even if it's not transmitting radio frequency as a wireless device, then some of the new smart meters are really posing problems for people. So the bottom line is you need to demand an analog, and the only way to test that that's not emitting radio frequency is to get a radio frequency meter, which is available through our website at stopsmartmeters.org.
Or let's tell people how to get to your website and get the information.
Yeah.
And they actually can turn that down and say, I do not want one of those things. In fact, we're going to sue you for the health detriment from this, and we want that off immediately. How can people get in touch with you and get more information?
The bottom line, Stan, is that these are health and safety violations. People need to absolutely refuse them. They can go to stopsmartmeters.org, and go to the frequently asked questions section. We've got resources and flyers to pass out, links to local groups you can get involved with, and if there's not one in your area, certainly start your own. Many people have. So,
and then you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, your health is certainly at stake. I mean, you're under attack from all points of view. Most people don't understand what's going on, but they're poisoning the water, and they're poisoning the air, they're poisoning the foods, they're poisoning our vaccines, they're poisoning much of our medicines, they're poisoning our children. They know what they're doing. If you haven't certainly read my treatise on the population control agenda, that's what it's all about. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Josh Hart. And Josh, I think that they simply want to wear people down, don't they? Aren't they just trying to wear us down, hoping people will sort of give up on this issue? So what's really happening? Are we having an effect across America, across the world, because this is a worldwide movement to poison people throughout the world?
You know, I think that there's certainly large areas. We've got about 10 states now, I believe, which have, you know, fought for an opt-out, even though that shouldn't be necessary. We never opted into this program. But people are, you know, increasingly through direct action, collective action that's peaceful with their neighbors, getting together and realizing that they do actually have the power to resist these meters. And so we've certainly seen many, many locally based successes where people bind together and fight together and refuse the meters successfully and have analog meters. And so, you know, as more people find out about this issue, as they have personal experience with people who've become electrosensitive and unable to be around, you know, the wireless signals that are pervasive, I think the tide will turn against this technology, and we're seeing the process of a mass revolt against them and a mass rejection. You know, I think people are wising up and beginning to ask questions, and I think, you know, more of us that can become active and let our friends and family members know about this issue, the better, because this kind of thing does spread through, you know, AM radio and friends, talking to friends and family members, and on a grassroots level, and that's the way we need to grow this movement.
Well, Josh, are you getting a lot of opportunity to talk, or some of the other people on this subject getting an opportunity to talk and get the information out?
You know, Dr. Stan, I think there's been a lack, an absolute lack of professional grade investigation into this issue, looking at it from the top down, and I think that's intentional, obviously. You know, but we need to see. We are speaking out. We are getting through on various channels, but, you know, of course, the mainstream media is ignoring this, and that's to be expected.
And this is the thing. Since the media in America is predominantly controlled, and I'm talking about not only newspapers, I'm talking about radio, I'm talking about television, fortunately, we do have the Internet, and you can get the information there, even though the enemies of freedom are always putting up all sorts of disinformation and phony articles to dissuade you. You can still get the information on the Internet if you are willing to do the research and if you can learn who you can trust and who you can't trust. Now, what about here in California? You live in California. What is the state doing? Is there any effort here on the part of our state legislators to try to protect the health of the people of this country, of this state?
I'd love to say that there's been, some champions in there to champion the public interest, but unfortunately, beyond the pressure that led to the opt-out clause a couple of years ago now, there's been no legislator who's been willing to come forward to introduce a bill to give communities the right to say no to the meters or to grind the program to a halt. So, unfortunately, no.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Josh Hart, and we're talking about the smart meters. We're talking about here in California, you can actually opt out. You have that right. But of course, the people who are behind this whole issue, and I believe it's part of the population control agenda, basically they put so much pressure or they bribe the various legislators so that nobody in California, none of our legislators, either in the Senate or in the Assembly, has the courage to introduce legislation just to stop this situation, which is basically hazardous to our health.
It's criminal. You know, it's a criminal assault on our human rights. The governor has also been lacking here in the state, but the CPUC is expected to make a decision on the final opt-out proceeding, the charges, the extortionate fees that they're charging here, which are totally unacceptable, and many, many thousands of people are refusing to pay. Those are on the table, and the CPUC has said they'll decide on a final program and a final policy around September, but they've been drawing it out, hoping people will get bored with it and overwhelmed and, this is their strategy. So they've been really kicking the ball down the road. And meanwhile, PG&E is refusing analog meters to people, violating the direct order from the PUC. And the PUC isn't taking any offensive action. So I think what you're saying, Dr. Stan, about population control might be really shocking to many. The very suggestion that this would be intentional is appalling, the way to look at the world. I think that, the reality is that we know that the authorities know by this point that the smart grid is harming people and are failing to stop it. And I think on that point we can all agree and move forward and oppose the program.
Well, what did you find over in the UK? Is there growing concern there? Are the people in England more concerned than the people here in America?
I think that they're the explosion of people injured by smart meters and the fires that occurred and all the abuses that were a part of PG&E's rollout in California made real waves and polarized the people of California against the utility in a way that's not going to go away anytime soon. And that awareness has been sort of percolating, throughout the country and throughout the rest of the Europe and the rest of the world. And as other places, the abusive and inappropriate wireless installations, we're seeing, like in England, there's a group called Mass Sanity who are fighting cell phone towers, and there's a different attitude in the way that, wireless equipment is deployed there. They don't deploy them, they don't put in the smart meter or the cell towers directly above a kindergarten or a nursery school, the kind of reckless thing that we do here in the U.S. So, There is a certain level of awareness, but the government is still very much pushing wireless proliferation and denying the obvious health risks as they are here, and people need to fight and be vocal and change things on a local level.
And I think people have to understand this is not our government. Basically, our government has been infiltrated by people who have a different agenda, and they pay these people very, very well to betray the rest of us. It's sort of like the people who actually were able to get aspartame in. The gentleman basically was put in as the head of the Federal Drug Administration in 1981 just for a couple of weeks. He was then certainly given $1,000 a day for the next 10 years. hours for getting aspartame to be released upon the public. This is NutraStreet Equal. It's developed as a biological warfare agent, has a profound impact on the health of the American people. It's in 14,000 food items here in the United States, and suddenly it's being utilized all throughout the world and damaging the health of people. And the same thing is true, certainly, with the smart meters. It's damaging the health of people, but most people find it so difficult to believe that this could really be going on. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Josh Hart. Josh, you go right ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Stan, again, you know, for having me on this evening. And I just want to encourage people who want to learn more about this issue and, you know, don't just take my word for it. Like, to do your own research the way I did, you know, 3 years ago when they started deploying these things. These are hazardous devices. Go to stopsmartmeters.org. We have information there about a new bill that's being introduced in the U.S. Congress. That's Bill H.R. 2685. It's a smart grid promotional bill that will make the smart grid mandatory, and people need to speak out against this. So go to stopsmartmeters.org and read the articles about it and how people are being injured in fires, and take action in your own community and speak out about this. Don't be afraid. We need to stick together and overcome.
Remember, we have smart grid, we have smart appliances, they will all have chips in them, all of your electronic gadgetry will, when you get rid of the old ones and put in the new ones, it ties together into the smart grid. So smart meters, smart appliances, smart grid, and they aim to, of course, dumbing down and destroying human lives. Our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. We're going to have to let Josh go. But thanks very much for being with us. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call. Good night, Josh. God bless.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan. Look forward to being with you shortly.
Makes you think of Blake, doesn't it? Makes you think of a lot of things. We're going to be in this yet, Mom.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Joss is not with us, so it's going to be open lines for the next half hour. And if you'd like to give us a call, we'll talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, here in the Central Coast of California. Now, we have an excellent 4-CD set on the danger of smart meters. That's just the, and then we have a book on the danger of smart meters written by our friend Barrett Schoes. And they're both available by calling 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to get the information, you need to get the information, you need to get other people to understand what's going on, and certainly you can go to the website up there and get to smartmeters.com and other websites and understand that they're poisoning us. And to put it into the larger perspective, you need to get my talk on Agenda 21, The Covert Plan. Agenda 21, The Covert Plan, a syllabus comes with that, and a lot of documentation on the genocidal agenda, yes, ladies and gentlemen, genocidal agenda that's being carried out at one time America, as it was at the top of the list as far as health and longevity is concerned. And we've dropped down to about 14th in the world, and this is not by accident. It is simply because the American people are dying sooner, and they're certainly actually becoming increasingly ill with all sorts of chronic diseases as they grow older. And this is not happening by accident, it's happening by intent. And the average person says this could never happen. Nothing could be that evil. Nobody would intentionally try to kill off large numbers of people. And I would ask, look, why did the Nazis kill off 6 million Jews? Why did they kill off 12 million Christians? That comes from a book called Warrant for Genocide. Warrant for Genocide. You can get the book and on the internet, and well worthwhile reading, and certainly in the foreword of the book written by a Jewish scholar. He tells you how they killed 12 million others. They were probably predominantly Christians. They knew exactly what they're doing, but we never talk about that. And of course, we never would talk about the fact that the Nazi movement was largely financed by American corporations and American banks. If anyone would like to see the letter that I found when I went through Colonel House's papers from Ambassador William Dodd. It was written in October of 1936 to Colonel House, and basically Ambassador Dodd is saying, you know, why are 100 American corporations over here in Germany? I mean, building the weapons for the Nazis, nobody here wants another war. We just got through a war. Nobody wants another war. Why are 100 American corporations over here building weapons for the German army when there's no profit to be made? There's no profit to be made because of the exchange controls. Do the stockholders of these companies understand what's going on? And, of course, William Dodd just couldn't understand. Well, I can tell you why this was going on. It was because they wanted a war, and you had to have a powerful enemy. If you're going to have a war and kill millions and millions and millions of people, and between 40 and 60 million people died during the Second World War, that was largely financed, at least in Europe, by American banks and American corporations, covered in a book we have that was suppressed for many years, but it was written by John Loftus. It's called America's Nazi Secret. Of course, a lot of this is covered in certainly Anthony Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, and Dennis Cuddy's book, The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan. But the average American is not supposed to understand the truth about what's going on. He's supposed to believe what he's taught in school, what he reads in the newspaper, and what he sees on television, and most of it just is not true. Well, it's open lines. We'll talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But what you're not really hearing here in the United States is what's really going on in Israel today. Everybody has been, only within the last couple of months, given a gas mask. Everybody's been told to go ahead and have a safe room. In other words, suddenly bind up all the cracks with some sort of a tape, masking tape or something, so that you'll be able to be in there and you'll be free of danger from chemical or biological warfare agents. And basically, they're laying out areas where they're going to be distributing water. If the water is turned off, certainly the people are being encouraged in certain areas of Israel to flee into Judea Judea and Samaria because there's a lot of Palestinians there, and they don't feel that they'd use chemical and biological warfare on the Palestinians, and so the Jews would be safe in that area. I'm not saying that's really true, but at least the people over there are preparing for war, and you're not hearing about this here. I mean, the real threat, so they about 2 weeks ago, they did a major call-up. Now, they did not necessarily do a mobilization, but they called up literally thousands of reservists, and they put them along the eastern border, along the northern border. But this is, information is being totally blacked out in the United States, with this increasing tension there along Israeli borders. Hezbollah, of course, as you know, has their troops over there, fighting certainly alongside Assad against the rebels. And basically what you really are never being told is what's going on in Syria is simply a struggle between Russia and the United States. And on one side, the United States is backing the Islamic terrorists, the Al-Qaeda, and all of the other radical Islamic groups who supposedly these terrible terrorists are going to kill all the Americans. Well, we're financing them, ladies and gentlemen. We're financing the terrorists in Syria. Why doesn't the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post ever point out that we're financing the same terrorists that supposedly are threatening us here in the United States? We're financing them there in Syria, and then on the other side you have Assad. And of course he has his allies, the Russians. He has the Iranians. He has Iraq. And basically, he has Hezbollah and Hamas, and they're all certainly backing Assad, even though Hamas is Sunni. And then, of course, on the other side, you've got the United States. And we have Saudi Arabia, we have Qatar, we have some of the other Sunni states. And then, of course, England and France. And we're backing the other side. And basically, of course, they killed 100,000 civilians there in Syria in a war really between Russia and the United States. And that's just simply the battlefield where this is being fought. But that's what it's really about. And so the whole idea is put forward by Zbigniew Brzezinski in an article in Time magazine somewhere around the 17th of May. I've forgotten the exact date. But he just pointed this out. Nobody's telling the American people what this is about. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. It's open lines, and well, we really look forward to having a call from you. A caller just called and said there was an explosion in a fertilizer plant in Texas. It was more likely caused by a missile because of the explosion followed by the noise he heard when he was in the Navy. I don't know whether that's true or not, but somebody was very concerned about the explosion in the fertilizer plant we had in Texas a couple of weeks ago. I really don't know what comment to make on that other than that gentleman just called in here. And if you have any questions or comments about any of the things that are going on, but if you go over to the Middle East today, you'll find that, for instance, in Turkey, there are massive demonstrations there, and you're not hearing about this in the controlled media in the United States. There are massive demonstrations against the government, certainly in Jordan. And the massive demonstrations, certainly in Egypt today, against the Muslim Brotherhood. Fortunately, the military has taken over, but you said that we can't depend upon them either. Right now, we've got Jay calling from Soquel. And again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. It's open lines. Would love to hear from you. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And hi, Jay. How are we doing?
I'm fine, sir. I was listening to the BBC yesterday, and I was very surprised to hear they had the grandfather and the guy was talking about, he was like, you know, the father and the grandfather of the person they got killed in Yemen, and he was a professor, and this was the older, you know what I'm saying, sir?
Yes, I know. Basically, there was a gentleman. He was accused of being a terrorist by the United States government, and basically, he was never indicted. He was actually hunted down by a drone in Yemen and killed.
Well,
and basically, they justified that, saying, well, he was a terrorist, but it was his 16-year-old son. His 16-year-old son was living over in Yemen. He was looking for his father, and he was having a dinner one evening with a friend, with his cousin. And suddenly an American drone came and killed a 16-year-old boy, never indicted for being a terrorist, never even suspected of being a terrorist. They simply killed him and his cousin and six other people because the boy's father had been accused, never indicted, never charged, but had simply been accused of being a terrorist. And they killed the father and they killed the son. And the son was an American citizen. If they can kill American citizens because they don't like your father, is anyone in America safe today? And incidentally, there was an article, and I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. I just read it today, by the grandfather you're speaking of, who had actually trained in America. He is a professor over there in Yemen. Go right ahead, Jay.
Yes, Dr. Stan, I was amazed that he gave his whole story and said, like, you know, like on the BBC, how his son and his grandson, he even mentioned the fact that his grandson was born in Arizona or something, you know what I'm saying? And that he said these drones came in and killed his son and his grandson. And I was just amazed because you never hear that, you know, the American media, and you're the only person that, you know, pointed this out even before this guy came out. And said it himself, sir. So I'm just doing, you can put that out there that, you know, either the entire world's crazy or we are.
Well, so. Basically, I think it's so important, Jay, to point out the fact that the father was killed, and then 2 weeks later they killed the innocent son. There was never any question the son was a terrorist. They just killed him because they didn't like his father. And if they could do that to that boy, an American citizen, it is any young man in America safe today? That's criminal. That is murder. And believe me, there's no statute limitation. And this could not have been done without the full consent or knowledge of the current president of the United States. And I certainly call him a murderer. The president is a murderer. If he did not order this, then he should go out and indict the people who did order the death, the murder of a 16-year-old American citizen. Who was that? Simply, his crime was he was looking for his father, who incidentally was already dead, had already been killed without an indictment, without ever being charged, just on suspicion that he was a terrorist. Anything else, Jay?
Yes, sir. I'll leave with one thought, that the lunatics are in charge of the asylum.
Well, we're in real trouble
today. The lunatics are in charge of the asylum.
Amen to that. God bless. Thanks very much, Jay. Okay, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and give us a call. We have Bruce calling from Durand, Michigan, and if you'd like to give us a call, you have something you'd like to talk about, don't be bashful. But, ladies and gentlemen, there's so much going on, certainly, and I believe we're on the edge of some very serious, serious problems. We're basically here in America, why we have an economic policy that is going to collapse. It's not a matter of if, but when. Basically, we know very well that you cannot keep pumping $85 billion a month into the economy and simply creating all that money out of nothing and not have it sooner or later come back to haunt you in the way of inflation. The only reason we're not having inflation is because the major corporations are sitting on trillions of dollars of investment. The banks are sitting on trillions of dollars and not lending it out. If they ever started to lend it out and started to stimulate the economy, why we would have rampant inflation here. And basically, the whole thing is being manipulated. There is no way out of it. If they continue doing what we're doing, we're going to have runaway inflation. If they don't intervene and cut back on the pumping of all this money into the economy, if they don't simply cut back, when they do that, the economy is going to collapse. And that's why I really believe, of course, they're going to precipitate some sort of an EMP attack on America and bring the whole thing down. And that way they can say, well, we didn't do it. It's not our fault. But I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that everything points to the fact, in my estimation, that we're going to see a major cataclysmic effect. Event, whether it's an EMP attack or something else, I don't know, but I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and God is going to bring his judgment on America. Let's go to Bruce, who's calling us from Durand, Michigan. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Bruce, you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I think you're right about the war to bring about a change in the economy, the credit. Wipe the slate clean and start over again. I had a question about Russia. Do you think the S-300s have already been delivered to Syria? or are they looking for an excuse to deliver them? I know Israel said that if they try to deliver them, they'll bomb them.
Well, I would tell
you, Russians... Okay, go ahead.
I would tell you, Bruce, we certainly get a lot of our information from Barry Shamish, and he gets it from people over there in Israel. And basically, he told us last week that actually there had been two Israeli attacks on Syria, not mentioned at all by the major media. And one of those involved the S-300, Sydney surface-to-air missiles. And he claims that Israel attacked those and blew them up because they could not allow the Syrians to have that because they would be able to neutralize the Israeli Air Force. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But most of the things that Barry has put out, I've been able to verify, and they have been accurate. So, but we haven't heard a word about this in America, and the Israelis haven't mentioned it.
It was the first news item on RT, on Russia Today, on Monday, where everybody was talking about Snowden. They started their program with an attack in Latakia, or on Latakia, from Turkey, from Israel, using Turkish airspace, so they could kind of kill two birds with one stone. They could increase the destabilization of Turkey by making Turkish people mad that they'd allow Israel to use the base there, and then would also give the Russians an excuse to actually man those S-300s, which would be extremely dangerous. If Russia said, we will deliver them, we will assemble them, and we will man them, what would happen if Israel bombs them? Because I've always had the feeling, I talked to you a year ago about this, I've had the feeling that Russia is not going to back down on Syria. It's like they are more committed to Syria than Iran. I always thought they couldn't afford to lose Iran, but they could afford to lose Syria. I'm starting to think just the opposite now, that it might not be an EMP that America gets hit with. It might be like a limited nuclear war or something if the Russians actually man these S-300. So you think, Barry, I know I heard Barry the other night, you think they've actually attempted to bring them in to, that would be the northwest part of Syria, the Alawite stronghold there, Latakia, and that Israel, whether they use Turkey or not, they may have been, just been propaganda, Israel bombed them.
We don't know, Bruce. All we know is that I read the same report that you did, and supposedly, of course, the Israelis had used a Turkish airbase as a base for launching their attack on these S-300 missiles that were actually in Syria at the time. We're just going to have to wait and see. But basically, the smoke, there's fire. That area is certainly, I think, just a powder keg waiting to explode. And the average American is much more concerned about Trevor Martin than they are about the whole part of the world going up in a sheet of flame, maybe of nuclear flame.
It might be.
God bless. Thanks very much for calling. Okay, we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program right here at Radio Liberty.
America, land that I be late.
No. Wide with gold.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out across America that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported, and if you're in a position to help us, would love to have you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us maintain our 50 radio outlets across America every single week, or at least sometime during the week, people are hearing the truth that they're never going to hear through the controlled media. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, and of course you can get our four best CDs or tapes of the month, our monthly newsletter, or our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. Now, we have a lot of people who are members of the Radio Liberty family who don't ask for the either newsletter, they read it off the internet, who don't ask for the tapes because they listen to the tapes, listen to the programs regularly. But if you'd like to get them, of course, that's one of the privileges that comes with joining the Radio Liberty family. And certainly, as we need more and more people to help us because certainly some of our advertisers are having difficulty. And basically, of course, we have certainly we need to be able to come up with the $50,000 a month that is necessary to pay for our radio broadcast and our shortwave and our internet and radio stations. And believe me, it's an expensive proposition, but we've been able to do it with your help, and hopefully we're going to be able to continue doing it. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, our number 1-800-544-8927. And if you can't certainly afford to join the Radio Liberty family, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection, because we truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Now, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need, of course, to get the 4-CD set on smart meters. And you need to get the book on smart meters. It's written by our good friend, Sidney Barrett Schoes. And then, of course, we have so much other information that we... You need to get my talk on Agenda 21, the Covert Plan. Sidney, the DVD by Michael Shaw, Agenda 21, The Wretching Transformation of Society. And certainly Michael Shaw does an excellent job on that talk. But we have talks on so many other things. We have a wonderful talk on geoengineering and certainly on the chemtrails, contrails, well, certainly by Rosalind Peterson. We have a 4-CD set on that subject. We have a 4-CD set on aspartame, and we have a talk by Betty Martini on aspartame. We have my talk on the world revolution. We'll actually see my interview with a multi-billionaire, Ambassador Earl T. Smith, the American ambassador to Cuba at the time, that we installed Fidel Castro. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the United States installed Fidel Castro. He didn't have the support of the Cuban people. He didn't win the revolution. The United States installed Fidel Castro because we needed an enemy. And if we focus the attention of the American people on Fidel Castro, we take our attention off where the real enemy, and the real enemy is not in Russia, they're not certainly over there in the Middle East, the real enemy is right here in America. It is the subversive element that controls our government, the secret cabal that David Rockefeller writes about in his book, Memoirs, on page 405. And if you'd like to get the book, we do carry it. It's called Memoirs by David Rockefeller, or you can get the quotations, so I give you the exact page and the exact wording in my talk, Agenda 21, The Covert Plan. That's an excellent DVD. We recommend it to you. Well, there's so much information. Go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And you can get there a list of all of the various four CD sets and tape sets and videos and DVDs and the various books that we carry. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to really understand what's going on. Certainly we have a new book, certainly by Barrett Shows, on how to protect your children. How to protect your children. It's well worthwhile getting. And we have all sorts of other books, certainly. Well, a wonderful one by Glennon Caldwell, my minister, the man who brought me to the Lord 50 years ago, talking about, certainly, education. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
Let us swear allegiance. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian and Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they intend to be the views of William Grigg. And William, of course, was for many years the senior editor of the New American Magazine. He was for a time editor of Republic Magazine. He certainly now writes extensively for Lou Rockwell. And of course, he writes the Radio Liberty newsletter every month. And we hope that you'll get to subscribe to the Radio Liberty newsletter so you can get William's writings. It's always certainly insightful. And William certainly is one of the certainly outstanding minds and people and writers that we have within the conservative movement. And it's always a pleasure to have William. I'm going to ask my producer to pass him over so we can get him onto the line here and find out what the issues are that he feels are really important for us this evening. William, thank you very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing and a pleasure to be with you.
What are we going to be talking about this evening?
I suppose that we're going to have to address what's being done here to foment a continent-spanning race war, which is something you and I have discussed in the past, and that's a prospect that has haunted me and disturbed my sleep for a number of years. I've long thought that when, at long last, the powers that be decided to set Americans of different ethnicities against each other, we could see a continent-spanning spectacle of ugliness that would make the wars of Yugoslav succession look like a slap fight. And I don't know whether or not we're going to see this blossom to the effulgent ugliness that we could see this year, but there's certainly an effort being made.
Oh, yeah, I just love these pictures of this little 13-year-old black kid boy. He's really so attractive. Of course, he doesn't look anything like the 17-year-old hoodlum who actually was wearing a hood, who's actually been smoking, certainly, marijuana, who actually had been involved in altercations in the past, but that is not the image they're trying to give us. They're giving us this picture over and over again. They show us of this sweet-looking little 12 or 13-year-old black boy, and they tell us that this is the boy who was brutally murdered by Mr. Zimmerman, who wanted to kill him, you know, who was looking for a fight, who was actually tracking him down, and it was certainly because this boy was being tracked, you know, and being followed, why he was therefore justified in counterattacking. Go right ahead, William, because I share your concern. This whole thing is staged. I've never seen such a beautiful example of a staged effort to incite racial hatred between black and white, and white and black, and all I can say is, thank goodness that there are some of the black leaders out there, certainly not the Al Sharpton or the Jesse Jacksons, but some of the black ministers are saying, this is wrong, don't you know you're being manipulated? And fortunately, I think that there are enough of the black people who know they're being manipulated, that this is not going to deteriorate into a race war, despite all of the efforts of the people who control the media to incite racial hatred, black on white and white on black.
Well, they certainly flatten the narrative, as you say, with respect to what happened in the encounter between Martin and Zimmerman, up to and including the blatant misrepresentation of Mr. Zimmerman's ethnicity, his background, and the fact that under some standards that prevailed in some of our more unfortunate elements of our history, Mr. Zimmerman himself might have been considered black because of an obsession with the one-drop rule in some parts of the South. But that's not the only way that they've consistently misrepresented what happened here, and that they're capitalizing on the latent tensions that are involved in this case. And, of course, Mr. Obama did his level best to spread accelerant on the embers of this race war that people are trying to stoke, and that's going to have consequences too, and most likely very serious ones that will be inimical for everyone.
But I just hope the American people can see through his hypocrisy. Oh, if it had been, if I had a boy, he'd look just like Trevor. William, you go right ahead.
Not only did he say in the immediate aftermath of the killing of Trayvon Martin a year and a half or so ago, that if he had a son, he would have looked like Trayvon. Today, he said 35 years ago, Trayvon could have been me. So he was even more intimately associating himself with Trayvon Martin to some extent. And I think that if Mr. Obama was possessed of so much of a flicker of self-awareness and human decency, he would maintain a discreet silence, not only because it's not his role in the constitutional scheme to insert himself into a matter that's been adjudicated here, that has gone to a jury and resulted in acquittal. And of course, the so-called Department of Justice is doing their level best to find some way to contrive some rationale for inserting themselves into something that is a splendid example of res judicata. The matter's been decided. There's no place to take this because the jury has acquitted this individual, and under the canons of Anglo-Saxon Western common law going back for literally centuries, once a jury has found somebody innocent of a criminal charge, you can't charge him again.
I know, but they can always come up with, as they did certainly with the this other case involved the two police officers, you know, and basically they got them on civil rights violation, the so-called Rodney King, and that's what they talk about here. Oh, my goodness, we got to get this guy sitting on something, so we'll say he violated this man's civil rights because he was black. But they can't prove it. But it doesn't matter whether they can prove it or not. They can bring it up, and they can actually make a major issue out of this. And they can simply destroy this man's life even more. The Rodney King trial was a gross miscarriage of justice. Mm-hmm. But where was the outcry from the American people? But go ahead.
Well, that's a very good point. And the significant material difference between the Rodney King incident and this one is that in the case of Rodney King, you had four police officers who were agents of a government. They were public officials who were subject to civil rights laws. In this case, you've got an individual who was a volunteer in a neighborhood watch association. He was not an agent of the government. He was not a police officer. He aspired to be a police officer. I think he had certain habits of mind that reflected that he wanted to be a police officer, identified with the police, but he was not a police officer. Ergo, there's really no civil rights issue here to be examined. In the case of the O.J. Simpson trial, you had a civil action brought against O.J. Simpson in which he was found civilly liable for the death of his former wife. That's a different proposition. the Justice Department may try to find some way of filing a lawsuit against Mr. Zimmerman. I doubt they're going to do that. But in terms of a criminal investigation, there's simply no way to go about this legitimately. That doesn't mean that they're not going to try.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Sidney William Greig mentioned about the O.J. Simpson trial. You know, that was really an amazing, amazing trial. We actually put together a four-tape set on this, which every in four CD, I don't know if it's available in four CD, it probably is, but you need to get it and you need to listen to it because most white people feel that O.J. was guilty. Most black people feel he was set up. And I believe he was set up. I don't think there's any question at all that this was a gross miscarriage of justice. And so they wanted to create this issue of black on white and to divide our nation, which they did with the O.J. Simpson trial. And then they eventually got him on some other charges. Some fellow, I think it was probably a government shill, went to O.J. and said, look, somebody's selling all your products. Let's go down and talk to them. They've got all these things that they're yours. They belong to you. Why don't we go down and see them? And O.J. foolishly went down with him. And this guy had a gun. Well, the guy who had the gun got off scot-free, and they sent to O.J. prison for 10 years on totally scurrilous charges. They were going to get O.J. one way or the other. I do not believe for 1 minute that he killed Nicole. And if you've never heard our 4-CD set on O.J. Simpson, listen to it and weep. Go right ahead.
It's a very good point. I just recently, within the last couple of days, published an essay at my blog, Pro Libertate, entitled I'm Going to Take Him Out, which deals with what I would have to consider to be a police murder of an admittedly somewhat unsavory man by the name of Wade Pennington in South Jordan, Utah. Actually, it occurred in West Jordan, Utah, but the officers involved in this were from South Jordan. The thing about Mr. Pennington is that he had been convicted, properly convicted of burglary, I believe 22 counts of burglary. I think he stole 22 items. They charged each one of these incidents separately. That's some, one of the favorite tricks the prosecutors have. So he had gone to prison, and he ended up on parole, and then he was subject to a parole violation. They reinstituted most of his sentence. In 2005, he filed a habeas corpus motion. He actually wrote it himself. A pro se habeas corpus motion means that he was challenging the legality of his imprisonment. That's what the habeas corpus provision permits him to do. And pro se means that he filed it on his own. He didn't have help from an attorney, apart from somebody apparently got him the proper documents and taught him the essential language that's used in filing motions of this kind. There are people who are jailhouse lawyers who know how to do this. But he didn't get any help from an actual member of the bar. And that petition was granted by an appellate court in Utah in 2005. So he was released from prison for spending, I think, 4 years behind bars. And what happened is that because he'd been released, the South Jordan Police Department decided that they were going to try to find some way to put him back in prison because they considered his sentence to have been too lenient. So they spent several years stopping him at every opportunity to use his driving an SUV that belonged to his living girlfriend. He started a handyman business and started to rebuild his life. His parole officer in 2009 violated his parole. That is to say, he gave him a parole violation because he'd used alcohol. He was 41 years old at the time. He wasn't arrested for drunk driving. He wasn't involved in a crime of any kind. But he was headed back to prison, most likely, in June of 2009. After a May 17th hearing. In the middle of May of that year, he had a hearing that he was told that he'd have to come back about 2 weeks later for a sentencing hearing. And between that hearing and the sentencing hearing, in late May, he was involved in a high-speed chase that ended with him T-boned and pinned in by two police vehicles. One police officer ordered him out of the car, and then the other police officer shot him when he started to come out of the car. And then they falsified the crime scene, falsified the report. You end up a story about how he had rammed their vehicle several times. The video provided by the dash cam units in both cars confirmed that he never rammed their car, but they rammed his several times. He was unarmed, he was not resisting, and he was gunned down while he was complying with an order to get out of the car. Now, why did they do this? The family makes a pretty strong case on the basis of documents that were provided to the investigators, produced by the investigators, that they wanted to put him back into prison. They had decided that, for whatever reason, he had not served enough time. And they weren't satisfied, perhaps, that he would end up in prison again, and so they took the first available opportunity to try to arrest him on a falsified burglary charge. And when he fled, because he had an instinct to flee from the police for reasons I'll explain in a second, during the course of the pursuit, the two officers who pursued him went off mic. They went to Channel 3. That's a discrete private channel that's not recorded by the dispatchers and not audible to anybody else on the circuit. They went to 3, and that's a violation of the chase policy. You're not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be documented, everything that you do. But they apparently contrived a rationale where they were going to claim that he committed aggravated assault on a police officer by trying to run one of them down. And that ended with a kill shot from 6 feet away at a time when he was complying with the police officer's orders. Now, one of the reasons I talk about this story, albeit in abbreviated form, is because I want to underscore what you said about how O.J. Simpson was going to go to prison one way or another, that there are people who believe that once the process of the justice system has played out and the jury's handed in a verdict that they don't like, there are people who go back and correct that jury's verdict according to their own sensibilities. That happened with O.J. Simpson, and there are people who want to do that with George Zimmerman as well. Whatever you think of Mr. Zimmerman's actions, the fact is that a jury has acquitted him of that charge. That settles the matter in terms of what the law would dictate. The government has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt in the minds of a citizen jury that somebody has committed a crime. The burden of proof is on the government. The presumption of innocence belongs to the accused. And the original refrain on the part of the Al Sharptons and the people who foolishly follow him was that there had to be a trial. They will profess to be aggravated over the fact that there was no trial, there was no grand jury, there was no apparent investigation, there was no initial arrest. They demanded that Mr. Zimmerman face accountability for the criminal justice system. He did. The thing is, they were thinking in terms of result-oriented prosecution. They weren't dissatisfied that he wasn't put on trial. They assumed that the trial would be a mere formality, a matter of ratifying his guilt, which, of course, is too often the assumption in what passes for the criminal justice system today. This trial was, in many ways, anomalous in that regard. It wasn't anomalous in terms of the behavior of the prosecutor. The prosecutor in Florida is somebody who's a fully paid-up member of the Andrei Vyshinsky fraternity. Mr. Vyshinsky was the Soviet prosecutor, Joseph Stalin's show trials in the 1930s. And she pretty clearly wanted to turn this into a show trial, beginning with the fact that she grotesquely overcharged Mr. Zimmerman. There's just no way, on the basis of what was documentable, that a charge of murder, too, would fit the facts. You could say, perhaps, that he should have been prosecuted for negligent homicide. You could perhaps make a case. But that's not what she tried him on. She wanted to try him on murder, too. And I think that the jury, at one point, had asked for instructions when they were deliberating regarding the manslaughter charge, which would be equivalent, I suppose, of negligent homicide. But they didn't consider the facts as presented by the prosecution to be suitable to support a charge of negligent homicide either, or manslaughter. But the fact is that they delivered a verdict. That verdict now is irreversible. That's not to say that there aren't people who are going to try to reverse it the same way that they reversed the verdict with respect to O.J. Simpson, as you point out, and the same way that in this really obscure and all but unknown case in South Jordan, Utah, there were a group of police officers who apparently were determined to reverse the judicial rulings with respect to the status of Mr. Pennington, Wade Pennington.
I think one of the interesting things about the Zimmerman trial is that basically they charged him with second-degree murder, knowing full well they were never going to be able to make that stick. It's almost as if they charged him with that so that he would get off, so they could utilize this so they can turn American against American. And this is really all part of a carefully coordinated effort to create racial hatred in America. And night after night now, we see this picture of this little 13-year-old, cute little 13-year-old kid. Time and time and time again, they show it. Yes, occasionally they do show what he really looked like. Suddenly a young hoodlum, but suddenly so many of the pictures are this sweet little boy. And they're doing that intentionally. They're playing on the emotions of our black population because they want the black to feel you can't get a fair trial. And yet I honestly believe that they charged Zimmerman with second-degree murder, knowing they would never get that sick. I don't think they wanted to convict him. I think they wanted the issue to turn black against white and ultimately black against white against black. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm sufficiently cynical to believe that was the case, because otherwise it would be inexplicable. But again, Angela Corey, the prosecutor, does have a history of overcharging people, particularly where firearms are involved, and she's not well respected in the circles that she inhabits. It's interesting when somebody's a prosecutor who comes to disrepute with fellow prosecutors, know that that person's not really fit for civilized company. I do think that once they had selected a charge, that they were pursuing a strategy that was foredoomed to failure, and any competent prosecutor is going to know that. So incompetence can only explain so much. When you've eliminated incompetence as a potential motive, then you're left with something more sinister. And this is obviously a political prosecution. It's interesting that the prosecutor fired her IT director because her IT director had leaked to the press the fact that the prosecution, and this is pretty typical behavior on the part of prosecutors, had been withholding discovery from the defense team.
But basically, in my estimation, the prosecutor should be sent to prison for withholding information that
that's
innocent man was innocent. And the fact that prosecutors and attorneys are above the law, they can violate the law they want to. And in this instance, of course, somebody had actually told the truth. And what happened? They got fired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's actually fairly typical, as we're seeing now. Nothing will get you in trouble more quickly than being a conscientious whistleblower. They'll put whistleblowers in prison. That's what's happening with Bradley Manning, and that's what the administration wants to do to Edward Snowden, and that they did to John Kiriakou, the CIA agent who blew the whistle on torture. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see other retaliation directed at this conscientious IT official from the prosecutor's office. We'll have to see.
Well, hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Woody and Greg right here at Radio Liberty.
While the storm clouds gather.
William, you go right ahead.
Well, one of the things I wanted to point out here by way of sort of tying a little bow at the top of the story here of this unfortunate fellow, Chad Pennington from Utah, I mentioned that he had had some really bad experiences with the police. When he was let out of prison in 2005 after the appellate court upheld his habeas corpus motion that he had written himself, there was a riot at the prison because it's just a very unusual thing for somebody who's an inmate to succeed in filing a pro se motion that gets him out of prison and gets the sentence reconsidered. And I spoke with Dennis Pennington, the brother of Wade, and what he said is that when they went to pick up his brother at the prison, the officials there said, get him out of here right away. We're going to put the prison on lockdown. Things got really, in other words, very turbulent, and the prison was on lockdown for a day after this. From that time, Dennis is convinced there were people in South Jordan, West Jordan, and Salt Lake County who decided that they were going to make an example out of Wade Pennington because he had caused trouble in the prison. It made the inmates rested and restless. And so he was being stopped practically every week on pretext. He was the subject of pretext stops. He was never apparently given citations. He was certainly not arrested for anything that he had done until such time as he ended up with the parole violation because he had, I guess, had a six-pack of beer in a circumstance where he wasn't harming anybody else. But as a result of his parole being violated, he was taken into custody and then held for 40 days in spite of the fact that under Utah law, a show cause motion had to be filed and heard by a judge within 72 hours. So he was held for over a month without legal cause in very bad conditions where he was abused by the people who detained him at the Salt Lake County Jail. Now that was something that happened immediately before the pursuit that took place. Now, the night of the pursuit, he had gone to visit a friend in a neighborhood that had a sporting goods store, and his SUV, the SUV he was driving actually belonged to his girlfriend, was spotted by Sergeant Alan Christ from the South Jordan Police Department. And Christ sent out a radio message to the officers who ended up intercepting him saying, I don't want you to pursue this vehicle, but I want you to confirm the license plate. And then without cause of justification, they got involved in a high-speed chase because Pennington wanted to get away from the police. He wasn't speeding at the time. He just didn't stop. Just didn't stop when he saw that there was a South Jordan police cruiser behind him. Probably it was a bad thing to do. He would have been better off if he would have stopped, but I guess he figured that as soon as he stopped, he was headed back to jail for another 30 or 40 days. He wouldn't be able to get his material together to make a case for staying out of prison. And so it was a bad choice on his part, but it's not one that should have led to a summary execution, which is what happened within 14 minutes of Alan Chris sending out that message.
Well, basically, is he the family bringing a lawsuit against the police officers?
Well, here's the thing about that. They filed a $1 million lawsuit about 4 years ago. A federal judge by the name of Dee Benson threw it out of court in 2011, and apparently it's being reconsidered now. What's happened as well is that the case has been taken out of the jurisdiction of the Salt Lake County District Attorney's Office, and I think it's before the Davis County District Attorney's Office. An independent investigation by another county is underway. But I don't really think that there's going to be anything materially beneficial come out of the Davis County investigation either, because these people are mobbed up, let's face it.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Grigg right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess it's William Grigg, and we're simply talking about judicial malpractice and sometimes how the police officers can target people, and sometimes police officers act outside of the law, believing that they have the right to determine the punishment for people who have been guilty of crimes rather than the judicial system. And if they feel the judicial system is incorrect, then they take the law into their own hands, sometimes with deadly consequences. Go right ahead.
That's exactly what happened here, I'm convinced. One of the things I find really interesting is that the officer who pulled the trigger, his name is Gerald Nichols, shot Wade Pennington at a time when the window to his cruiser was closed. They were, as I mentioned, he T-boned the vehicle that was being driven by Pennington. They were in a cul-de-sac that actually cut him off with both police vehicles. They were skewed in such a way that the driver's side window of the police cruiser was facing the driver's side window of the SUV. They were separated by 3 to 6 feet. One police officer estimated 3 feet. The other police officer estimated 6 feet. Jared Nichols was the officer who had a gun pointed at Wade Pennington. The other officer, Brett Perez, was on the other side of the vehicle. He shouted at Pennington to get out of the van and get on the ground. And then he did this while he was on the passenger side of the vehicle. He crossed around the front of the SUV that was driven by Pennington, thereby getting out of the line of fire. He actually said in the investigation after the shooting that he wanted to get out of the crossfire. And as soon as he got around the front of the vehicle, as Pennington was moving to the door to get out of the vehicle, Jared Nichols shot him twice through a closed window. Later said that he wasn't complying with his commands to... They actually gave contradictory commands. He said, freeze, and then get on the ground. You can't do both. You can't both freeze and get on the ground. But Perez said that he never heard the commands because the window was rolled up. Obviously, Pennington didn't hear the commands. In any case, this all happened within about 1.5 seconds. And then after he shot Pennington, Nichols said, Wade, I will shoot you. Freeze. No, I will shoot you. Wade. He called him by name. And then he told the investigators later they had no idea who this guy was. And neither of them spoke to him, and they didn't know who he was, but rather there was a furtive movement that he had made to put him in fear for his life. And that's obviously a lie. He called him by name. It's on his dash cam video. And the thing about this incident that I find so repellent is that the district attorney's investigating team, the protocol officer investigated this, had investigated a very similar shooting by Jared Nichols 2 years earlier. And the circumstances were nearly identical to another shooting that had taken place about a year and a half earlier, where the predecessor to the DA at the time was going to bring criminal charges against the police officer. But when Laura Miller, the DA who had ascended to that position in Salt Lake County in 2009, came to office, she dismissed that case. And so you have these three shootings that are very similar and that involve police officers getting down unarmed suspects following a high-speed pursuit. As they're apparently trying to comply with our orders to get out of the car, they order them out of the car, and then they call that a furtive movement that puts them in fear for their life, and they cap the guy. But Jared Nichols, the shooter, was promoted. Brett Perez, on the other hand, was fired within a few months of the incident for violating the high-speed pursuit policy. that both violated that policy. There was no reason to chase this guy. He was not a felony suspect. They'd been specifically told by their commanding officer, Sergeant Crist, not to pursue this vehicle, but rather to verify the license plate. Crist got a investigative team to go check at the side of the sporting goods store because he claimed that he suspected that Pennington had broken into that store. Perhaps that's a reasonable suspicion. He had been convicted for burglary, but they found no evidence that there was a break-in and nothing was missing. Pennington had been visiting a friend. The friend was able to confirm that Pennington had visited his home that night. It happened to be in the same neighborhood. But in spite of all this, this matter was investigated within the space of 12 days. It was dismissed. Both officers were exonerated, but one of them was fired for violating the high-speed policy. So you have a high-speed pursuit that involved, before the shooting, an attempt on the part of Jared Nichols to run the vehicle off the road using a pit maneuver, which, as he admitted to investigators, is only to be used in a pursuit where deadly force is justified. In other words, they were already using deadly force against somebody they should have been chasing in the first place. And then they end up shooting him, and after they shot him, they tried to drag his body through the window. They didn't render medical aid, but they tried to drag his body through the window. I contend they did this in order to make it look as if he were leaping through the window and endangering the life of Officer Nichols. But this is once again an example of, I contend, the type of mentality you referred to earlier, where there are people who are not content with an outcome that is insufficiently punitive. They want to go back and rectify a mistake being made by the judicial system where leniency has been offered or an acquittal has been handed down. That's a really sick and disturbing mentality, whether you're thinking on the part of police officers or prosecutors or the public at large.
Well, because he never should, of course, he should have stopped it rather than trying to run
sure.
from the police.
That would be a terrible mistake
on his part.
Crime.
And it's sort of like the tragedy with Trevor Martin, you know. The whole thing never should have happened. We'll be back in a moment. Well, William, you go right ahead.
One of the things I find interesting about what's going on now with the efforts, I guess, to undo the verdict in the Zimmerman Martin case on the part of the so-called Justice Department is that one of their civil rights affiliates has established an email account and, I guess, toll-free number soliciting tips regarding potential civil rights violations by the Zimmerman family. That's really unsettling for a number of reasons. First of all, because there's no jurisdiction here, as I pointed out, as somebody who is not part of a government agency, Zimmerman really isn't under the jurisdiction of civil rights laws. He's been acquitted by a jury, which means that he cannot be criminally prosecuted on the same set of facts. That's double jeopardy. It's prohibited by the Constitution. The only reason they would be doing this, I contend, the Justice Department, as the style itself would be doing this, is because they want to cultivate hostility and a sense of collective grievance here. That's the same so-called Justice Department, which through its Community Relations Service was helping to organize protests a year and a half ago.
And I think that is really just an important thing, William. This is not really brought out, but basically the Justice Department have hired people and paid people to demonstrate to demand a trial that Zimmerman be brought up on trial. Now, basically, what right does the federal government have to do that? They don't have any right because it's out of their jurisdiction. It's obvious that the people in government wanted a racially charged issue. They want to turn black and white against white and white against black. And this is what the average individual finds hard to believe, that there could be actively people that are actually working at the upper echelons of our government who are trying to churn up racial unrest.
Well, the thing that I find unsettling here is how vulgar and obvious this is. Usually there's at least a pretense on the part of the federal government, the people who run it, that they're not doing what they're obviously doing. They go through some pantomime of sincerity, they try to find some way of wrapping a gauzy layer of ingenuous rhetoric around their obvious efforts to appeal to the base instincts of the mob and to collectivist sympathies. But in this case, they're doing so overtly and with no pretense that they're doing anything else.
Hold that thought. Hold the thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is William Grigg, and he's simply pointing out that it's very obvious that the people in the U.S. Justice Department, here they have no authority at all. This is a case of a murder. It is something that is to be taken care of at the state and the local level. But the federal government, first of all, paid agitators to go out and demonstrate to demand that Zimmerman be tried. And now, of course, they're interfering in this whole thing, trying to come up with some sort of a justification for trying him again under the civil rights law. Ladies and gentlemen, these people do not believe in justice. They don't believe in the law. What they want to do is turn white against black and black against white. And they're doing everything they can. And that's not the function of the federal government, unless you understand that our government has been taken over by people who want to create a diversion. They want to divide and conquer. That's how you can control. That's what it's all about. Turn white against black and black against white and Hispanic against black and black against Hispanic. It's the same old game the tyrants have always used. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there are people in Washington, D.C. who do not believe in our Constitution, but are using the money and the power of the federal government to foment racial dissent in America. Go right ahead.
I'm reminded once again of the fact that back in, must have been November, maybe early December of 1995, the Secretary of State at the time under Bill Clinton, a fellow by the name of Warren Christopher, you're familiar with him, no doubt. But,
oh, sure. CFR, I know him very well.
Yeah, the guy who headed the Christopher Commission after the racial riots, the post-Rodney King riots in Los Angeles. He was the Secretary of State at the time, and he decanted himself from a plane that landed in Sarajevo in Bosnia, the former Yugoslavia. This happened after the Dayton Accords that resulted in a huge U.S. military presence as part of a NATO so-called peacekeeping force. It was an occupation force. Actually, it was called the Enforcement Force. It was IFOR rather than a peacekeeping force. It was peace enforcement activity under Chapter 7 of the U.N. Charter, which meant that it was essentially a war action. Chapter 7 is the equivalent of the declaration of war in the U.N. Charter. But Warren Christopher deplaned in Sarajevo. And bear in mind, this is a city that has a great deal of history, much of it tragic, beginning with what happened with the Archduke Ferdinand in August of 1914. But at the time, it was a shelled and largely destroyed husk of what had been a beautiful city because of a tripartite civil war that pitted three irremediably hostile factions against each other. And the only thing keeping these people from killing each other was a large body of foreign occupation troops. And Warren Christopher made a comment to the effect that Bosnia was the model multicultural society. And I don't know whether he was being ironic or whether he was being thoughtless. I suppose a third possibility is that he was sincere. Perhaps that's what they consider to be the model of multiculturalism. People who are insurmountably hostile to each other, who are kept at bay by occupation forces, in this case, of course, the UN-supervised NATO multinational occupation army. But that, I think, is the type of vision that they have for the entire world and for the United States, which is that they would go so far in exacerbating the tensions and conflicts that exist among people of different ethnicities or different social classes. These things, of course, are innate to the human condition. They will be with us just as the poor will always be with us. It's an unfortunate aspect of our sin nature, I'm convinced, that there's nothing at all wrong with people seeking to associate with people of like mind or like background. I'm not at all scandalized. Somebody who's a large brown man, if he doesn't want to have any kind of a social to have any kind of a social relationship with me. I'm not scandalized if somebody would not enjoy my company, would prefer not to be afflicted with my company. So what? Either picks my pocket or breaks my leg. I'm not at all offended by the fact that white people they want to associate with white people or Hispanics with Hispanics and so forth. The problem I have is when government enforces these segregations. I mean, that's the type of segregation that is not only invidious but immoral, is when it's conducted coercively. That's what was wrong with the Jim Crow laws. That's what was wrong with a lot of the things in some of the unfortunate elements of our past. But that has nothing to do with people freely choosing to associate with people of similar backgrounds. So what? Big deal. As long as people are free to associate and are free to have commercial relationships with each other, and that means you can do business or withhold your business, works both ways, that's how things should operate. And relationships tend to be less envenomed if they're mutual rather than coercive. But the coercive utopians, the people who believe that we should be forced to associate and that we should be forcibly desegregated, I'm convinced that they want to inflame and antagonize those natural affinities or those natural antagonisms that would usually be either ignored or be placated, remediated through the marketplace. So when Warren Christopher is saying, yeah, Bosnia is the model for how multiculturalism works, I think he was speaking the truth, albeit ironically. I mean, we know that God put the truth in the mouth of Balaam's ass, so why couldn't he do the same thing with something like Warren Christopher, or allow Warren Christopher to speak the truth? In this case, the truth is malignant. But when Jesse Jackson, and of course, Jesse Jackson is the sort of a person who would lower the moral tenor of a meeting of La Cosa Nostra, a few days ago, unbosomed himself of the opinion in an op-ed column for the Chicago Sun-Times that we needed a UN inquiry into race relations in the United States. I think he's speaking the same language. And of course, as you point out, Dr. Stan, Mr. Christopher was deeply involved in the Council on Foreign Relations and everything that august body is involved in terms of promoting internationalism and undermining American independence. Jesse Jackson, of course, is a member of the CFR, and he has been for a long time. It's interesting to me, and I think we might have discussed this last week, you take a look at Jesse Jackson when he was a flame-throwing American equivalent of a liberation theologian back in the 1960s, somebody who was a Marxist by conviction but used the modalities of Christian worship and language to promote the idea of socialism. He retained a little bit of independence through perhaps the later or middle 70s with respect to issues like abortion. I mean, he would refer to abortion as applied racism because Margaret Sanger and people of her ilk had an agenda that was eugenicist. They wanted to weed out from the population those races that they considered to be less intelligent and less desirable. And, of course, they had a very strong interest in promoting abortion and birth control among black people. And so Jesse Jackson, before he was bought off by the establishment, was still a little bit independent on that subject, and from the time that he became a national figure, he never again returned to that issue. And you can see where there are other examples of people who have bought and paid for and have changed their lifetime convictions on important issues that way. But it's interesting that of all the unlikely things, he would be urging the United Nations to intervene here in the interest of promoting amity among ethnic groups in the United States. They don't have a really good track record in that respect. Their most notable accomplishment over the last, 20 years or so in the field of race relations was to preside over the genocide of 1.1 million people in Rwanda and to help propagate misery in the Congo, where you've had this horrible war that's gone on now for over a decade that's killed hundreds of thousands as well. Just in the last 10 years or so, and over the last 6 or 7 years, actually, in Somalia, you have tens of thousands of people who are being killed by a government that was installed through an invasion by Ethiopia. Charming people, the Ethiopian government, just wonderful people. But you have, in the person of Barack Obama, a president of the United States who has been actively involved, albeit in terms of policies he inherited from his predecessor in many cases, actively involved in policies that have resulted in the death of tens of thousands of black Africans through violence that is tendent to wars that the U.S. government has been fomenting. And we're supposed to believe that this individual is brokenhearted over the death of one 17-year-old black boy. You have to call him a boy or a young man in Florida in a case in which it's pretty clear that this was not somebody who was being pursued and gunned down for invidious reasons. You're supposed to believe that he weeps over Trayvon Martin, but not over the thousands of Somalis he's helped to kill. And he identifies with Trayvon Martin to the point of saying that 35 years ago he might have been that young man. This is the same guy who killed a 16-year-old American citizen through a drone strike. And that's something, by the way, which is in the news today. Yesterday, there was this heartrending op-ed column that was written by the grandfather of Abdul al-Awlaki, Nasser al-Awlaki, entitled "The Drone That Killed My Grandson." And he recalled in this op-ed, "I learned that my 16-year-old grandson, Abdul Rahman, a United States citizen, had been killed by an American drone strike from news reports the morning after he died. The missile that killed him, his teenage cousin, and at least five other civilians on October 14, 2011, while the boys were eating dinner at an open-air restaurant in southern Yemen. I visited the site later. Once I was able to bear the pain of seeing where he sat in his final moments." This is a restaurant. This happened at a restaurant. You remember when Rand Paul was derided by the Bien Pensant for talking about Americans being killed at the Starbucks by a drone strike? Well, that's the same thing that happened here, except it happened in Yemen and not in the United States. A 16-year-old boy. "They showed me the grave where they buried his remains. I stood over it asking why my grandchild was dead. Nearly 2 years later, I still have no answers. The United States government has refused to explain why Abdul Rahman was killed. It was not until May of this year that the Obama administration, in a supposed effort to be more transparent, publicly acknowledged what the world already knew, that it was responsible for his death. The Attorney General, Eric Holder Jr., now bear in mind, that's the same Eric Holder who gave an angry speech before the NAACP this week talking about how horrible it is that there are racial profiling policies by American police. And I agree there are policies of that sort, and I agree that they're horrible. But this is the guy who's part of an administration that murdered this 16-year-old boy. The Attorney General, Eric Holder, said only that Abdul Rahman was not specifically targeted, raising more questions than he answered.
Wait a minute. He was an American citizen. I think we have to understand he was an American citizen whose father had been targeted and been killed 2 weeks earlier. This had nothing to do with it. They simply killed this boy because they didn't like his father.
Yeah.
And that was actually the explanation that was given by a government official. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, this is murder. It's cold-blooded murder. Without an indictment, without certainly any justification, they killed an American citizen in Yemen, 16-year-old, and basically, if they can kill him, they can kill the son or grandson of anybody listening to this program. And Barack Obama either is guilty of murder, or he is certainly a failure to actually follow through and track down the people who are responsible for this murder. Under either circumstances, he is personally responsible because he's the man who's answerable. Go right ahead.
Yeah, it's called command responsibility. That's a principle that goes back to, I believe, 13th or 14th century England. If you're the guy at the chain, at the top of the chain of command, when something like this happens, you're legally accountable for it. Well, Mr. Nasser al-Awlaki, the grandfather of this murdered child, and the father of the murdered, of the child's murdered father, I mean, Anwar al-Awlaki was never charged with a crime. It was extrajudicial killing. That's murder. There's no other way of getting around it. No matter what he had done or what he had said, he was never charged with a crime. Never indicted for a crime, never tried. He was not given due process. He was summarily executed without probable cause, without warrant, without any kind of due process. That's called murder as well. The father was murdered. The son was murdered as well. They're both murder victims. The 16-year-old, of course, is the more aggravating case here. Well, Nasser al-Awlaki has filed a motion with the federal court demanding to know why it was that his 16-year-old son was murdered. Now, today, according to this AP story, federal judge said she finds disconcerting the Obama administration's position that courts have no role in a lawsuit over the 2011 drone strike killings of three U.S. citizens in Yemen, including an al-Qaeda cleric. U.S. District Court Judge Rosemary M. Collier made the comment at a hearing on a government motion to dismiss the lawsuit. The suit was filed by relatives of the three men killed in the drone strikes, charging that the attacks violated the Constitution. It named as defendants then-Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, then-CIA Director David Petraeus, two commanders in the military special operations forces, and seeks unspecified compensatory damages. The government has argued that the matter is best left to Congress and the executive branch, not judges, and that courts have recognized that the defense of the nation is best left to those political branches. This isn't military, by the way. This is not a military action. This is carried out by the CIA, that for whatever that's worth. But the distinction really doesn't make any difference here because you're not talking about something that involves an attack upon a sovereign government, which would, of course, be something that would fall into the war powers element of the Constitution. You're saying there is no courthouse door where this goes through, Collier told Deputy Assistant Attorney General Lawyer Brian Hawk. The judge repeatedly pressed Hawk to say what checks and balances the president faces, at one point saying in exasperation, there's a man who won't be taken off message. Let's see, what was the due process in this case, asked Collier, an appointee of President George W. Bush. Hawk said that there were checks in place, including reviews done by the executive branch. No, 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 Collier retorted. The executive is not an effective check on the executive branch when it comes to protecting constitutional rights. In other words, you're dealing here with the idea that the president doesn't answer to anybody in making decisions to kill U.S. citizens. It's essentially Stalinism, if you will, or the Fuhrer principle, what leader principle was carried out in National Socialist Germany.
And basically, this is murder, cold-blooded murder, and should I say, Barack Obama is guilty of cold-blooded murder. If he's not, then he should certainly be taking action against the people who are. Where is the outcry? And basically this article, I believe it was Wall Street Journal about 2 days ago, wasn't it?
Oh, the one that was the one by...
yes, by the grandfather.
It was yesterday's New York Times.
New York Times, okay. Well, it's a very important article. Read it, New York Times. Before we go on, William, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get to your articles, how they can get to your PayPal button. Go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, I really appreciate that. My website is Pro Libertate, and it's spelled P-R-O-L-I-B-E-R-T-A-T-E, Pro Libertate. The direct address on the web is freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or go to DuckDuckGo or some other search engine. I'm not recommending Google for obvious reasons, and type in Pro Libertate and William Grigg, and that should be the first return. There is a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay for those who are interested in donating to help keep Pro Libertate up and running and to keep my family up and running, and do appreciate all the generosity that we've received. Your kindness and your thoughtfulness, the generosity of some of your listeners, has been a real blessing to my family. We're forever grateful for that. Once again, it's called Pro Libertate, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. My radio program, Freedom Zealot Radio, is on every Saturday night at 8 o'clock Mountain Time at libertyroundtable.com. If you go to libertyroundtable.com, look in the upper right-hand quadrant. You'll find the Listen Live icon. Click that icon, and you'll be able to listen to the program. 8 o'clock Saturday evenings, Mountain Time, 7 o'clock California Time, 9 o'clock Central. A lot of what I publish at Pro Libertate is republished at lewrockwell.com. That's lewrockwell.com. And I also contribute to the blog at lewrockwell.com.
And he also, of course, writes the Radio Liberty newsletter. And when you subscribe to the Radio Liberty newsletter, you'll get Senator Williams' article that he writes every month for us. Our guest, of course, has been William Grigg. And we certainly advocate that you get his material, read it through. It's very enlightening, things that we need to think about and understand. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up tonight's program.
Dr. Stan, once again, it's always a pleasure and a blessing to be with you, and I appreciate the opportunity. And I am as concerned as you are over the possibility that racial incendiaries are going to set this nation on fire, and there's certainly an effort to do so. You have people who are veteran racial arsonists and ambulance chasers who are exploiting this issue, and they're finding that really, this is sort of a damp squib. There's not really much appetite on the part of the public, apart from people who are, you know, part of the rent-a-mob, part of the paid street theater performers, usually paid by tax-exempt foundations, to do something in terms of making this an issue that would have proverbial legs. But it's also worth remembering, of course, that the public mood changes dramatically when the economy is very, very bad as it is right now, and it's going to get worse this year. Just yesterday, of course, the long-anticipated municipal bankruptcy of the city of Detroit was finalized. And interestingly enough, there was a judge in Detroit, a federal judge, that tried to overturn this as well, saying that, and I see if I find the specific quote here, that it's not honoring the United States president who took Detroit's auto companies out of bankruptcy. In other words, you've got a federal judge here in Detroit trying to say that Detroit trying to file for bankruptcy is not permissible because the president has decreed that they won't go bankrupt. Now, once again, that's a recipe for dictatorship. That's a symptom of dictatorship. And that's an illustration of what is happening to our country here as the executive branch becomes a full-blown, fully realized executive dictatorship. And as the economy continues to disintegrate, the private economy, and what's left of the productive economy, is corporatized. And so you've got a real mixture here of very bad ingredients that can achieve volatility very, very quickly. So people, of course, need to be prepared for that contingency. But the most important thing people need to recognize here is that each of us is made in the image of our Creator. Each of us has equal worth to the Creator and should have equal worth in the eyes of each other. And we should reach out across these artificial barriers that are being defined by people who do not have our best interests in mind and try to practice the golden rule. It sounds banal. It may sound like rudimentary morality, but it's about time that we got back to first principles here, and there's no more important first principle than the golden rule.
I certainly agree with you, and I just hope and pray that people will understand that we really are involved in a spiritual battle that's being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Our guest, of course, is William Grieg. One more time, your website?
freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Libertate is the name of the website.
Good night. God bless. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope you enjoy our conversation on Friday evening with William Grieg. And basically, of course, this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners out there that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'd love to hear from you. And if you're not in a position to join for financial reasons, why, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Now, of course, we all recommend that everybody get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and if you'd like to get it in bulk form, in other words, lots of copies to give away, why, this is to be a big help. We want as many people as possible to read it and to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle. And certainly it's being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, financial, educational battlefield, but it is primarily a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. The book, again, it's called The Brotherhood of Darkness, and you get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. Now, we have certainly all sorts of other information there. We have a great 4-CD set on the threat of an EMP attack. It's called The Threat of an EMP Attack. We even have a talk on the threat of an EMP attack given by Ambassador Henry Cooper. You need to get this information. We have a book written by Michael Maloof, who was 30 years with the Defense Department, a senior Defense Department analyst reporting to the Undersecretary of Defense when he retired. Michael Maloof's book, A Nation Forsaken. A Nation Forsaken goes into the background of the very real threat of an EMP attack, and every effort on the part of Congress or certainly officials in government to counter the danger. In other words, put breakers into our electric circuitry across America so that if there were to be either a major solar flare or an EMP attack, that it wouldn't wipe out our whole electrical system. It would not simply shut down everything electrical in this country. If weren't there's an organized effort to block that, I'd say this is crazy, but there really is an effort, and the question is, who is blocking the effort to do what's logical to protect America, and even more, why? That's why you need to get the DVD, you need to get the 4-tape sets, you need to get the book on the threat of an EMP attack, and again, the name of the book, A Nation Forsaken, A Nation Forsaken. Well, then, of course, we have so much other information that you need to have to understand what indeed is taking place today. And if you haven't certainly heard my talk on population control, the secret agenda, you need to understand there is a plan, an organized, orchestrated plan, to kill off the vast majority of the people in our country. And if you doubt that, you need to go to Elberton, Georgia, and stand in the shadow of the great occult stone monument there, erected by members of a secret society. And basically, it's called the Georgia Guidestones, or the Georgia Guidestones, or the American Stonehenge, calls for the elimination of over 90% of the population of America, and you say, who in their right mind would want to do anything of that like that, or why would anybody in their right mind want to do that? And the answer is, nobody in their right mind. But we really are dealing with people who have a different worldview, because they worship a different God, and they're energized by truly demonic forces. Certainly, if you get to my talk on either Agenda 21, the covert plan, or population control of the secret agenda, you'll actually see pictures of the Georgia Guidestones, or you can certainly go up on the Internet and type in Georgia Guidestones and go to their website and look at them. Or you can certainly type in my name, Stan Monteith, Georgia Guidestones. And then, of course, we hope that you'll certainly go to your website and go to your search engine and type in the Population Control Agenda. The Population Control Agenda. And you can put my name or Radio Liberty. Get it and read it. If you want to, if you buy anything from us, just ask for a free copy. And understand there is a planned, orchestrated program to kill off the majority of the people in the world, and it's underway today. Our number 1-800-544-8927. Please, please pray for Radio Liberty.
July 29, 2013. It's Monday.